The following was recorded at the St. Louis Bi-State Area Convention in 2014. The opinions expressed here on this recording are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole.
Good morning. This is the Sunday morning session on March 23rd,
Yes.
2014. And I am Cindy, and I am a compulsive eater.
Hi, Cindy.
And this says to begin the session on time with the serenity prayer. So let's begin with the serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Our anonymity, like our abstinence, is a treasured possession. We ask the help of our guests, especially those representing the press or media, to protect the anonymity of all members present. We hope you hear something which you can take away with you and use. We ask that you eliminate any mention of names in reference to members of Overeaters Anonymous and that no unauthorized pictures be taken. This session is being recorded and posted to the St. Louis OA website. It will not be edited. Anyone wishing to remain anonymous should use a fictitious name. We request that two hatters, that is, OA members affiliated with related facilities or other anonymous programs, speak only of their personal recovery as OA members at OA meetings in order to help OA avoid endorsement of outside enterprises. Hi, I'm Cindy, and I'm a compulsive eater, and this meeting topic is Farewell to Fear and Shame.
Hi, Cindy.
And I'm going to start with just a little bit of my story. I have been in program for 24 years now. I have 14 years current abstinence, and I am maintaining a 60-pound weight loss, and I'm very grateful to my higher power and to this program for giving me that new life. I'm just incredibly grateful. The person who walked in these rooms 24 years ago was filled with fear, and the way she dealt with her life was to eat. My eyes would open in the morning, and the first thought was, what will I have for breakfast? I would have my breakfast. I would get ready. I would procrastinate. I would drag my feet, but I would get ready. I would go to work. As soon as I arrived at work, there was a cafeteria. I went down, and I probably picked up something to go have breakfast because nobody at work knew I already ate. Then when I got upstairs, I spent a lot of time walking back and forth to the break room. I'm very ADD, which I didn't know that until recently, but I am, and so I was not able to settle down if there were other people around. Once it got to be lunchtime, I would go down with my friends, and we would eat lunch, and then at 2 o'clock, desserts went on sale, and I was downstairs buying half-price desserts. So then at 4 o'clock, I would go down and hit the machines, and I would buy all the things that I wanted, which were then going to maintain me through the next 4, 5, 6 hours that I was actually going to work. Because everybody would leave, and then I would work. One of the things I did during those evenings was go around and raid everybody, every one of my employees' candy jars. So they'd come back in the next day, and their candy jar would be empty. That was one of the most embarrassing things I did, but I even got in their drawers. If they didn't have it out in a jar and I knew they had a stash, I would get in their stash. So, eat. I mean, the whole day was consumed with thoughts of food or actually getting the food. If I went home in the evening early enough, the thought as I went in the door was, what am I going to do with this whole evening? It was too long. What am I going to do to fill the space? Then I would go in and proceed to open every cupboard and eat anything I could find while I prepared a dinner for my family. Then when that meal was over, somehow I stopped. Somehow I didn't eat at night or anything, but if I had third helpings, I had a mother-in-law that cooked twice a week. We'd go to her house. She was a great cook. Third helpings. Then we'd sit around and play cards, and I'd fall asleep at the table. And I didn't understand that my body was just shutting down. It just was so overloaded. Nighttime, night sweats. I didn't understand. That was my body trying to push the toxins back out from all the food I had consumed all day. Next morning, what am I going to eat for breakfast? The day I got caught, I was sitting in my office. I had gone to one of the big discount stores and bought a 10-pound bag of for a particular candy. That was the one that everybody had in their jars. And so I bought this 10-pound bag so I could replenish what I would eat. I would stand at their desk and I would eat out of their jar, even if I was just working with them. And so I could replenish it. I thought, well, if I could just refill the jars, at least I don't have to be so embarrassed. And I may have done that, but basically I had that 10-pound bag in my drawer. I would open it. I would take out. It was just like these little cute things that I could sort by color and shape, and then I would eat them. And then I would reach in my drawer, and I would grab the next handful out, and I would sort it. And a friend was standing in the office with me, and I did it like 3 times in front of her. And I finally looked at her and said, I cannot stop doing this. I can't. And she said, well, get out a phone book and call away, and I will take you to a meeting. Because she knew there was no way I would have the courage to go alone. And she actually took me, and they actually asked me to come back. And I figured I'd be very useful to them. So my ego got me back. So for a person who was filled with fear, and I haven't even started on my shame stuff, but fear and shame, I still had an ego that said, I know all the answers. The thing I learned after I came in was to go back and look at my past. I was in program and work, and as I worked the steps, I learned to go back and look at what is creating the fear, what is creating the shame. And as we work the steps, we learn, even if we work them very quickly the first time, we learn that there's still more to be revealed, so we have to go back and look again. I'm a very nice person, and my biggest fear is that you're going to find out that really I'm not. Really, I'm not. Really, there's some ugly stuff in there. Really, sometimes my brain says the ugliest things you can imagine. And at the time, I thought if I had a thought, then it was a fact. So the fact that I would have these thoughts meant that I was just this terrible, terrible person. Some days I didn't want to take care of my kids. Some days I didn't like my husband. Some days I wanted to run away from home. But when I looked back, 2 years old, and these are the things my shame came from. 2 years old, I get hit by a car, and it permanently changed the way I look, permanently. And when you're growing up and you look different, other kids ask you, what happened to you? That starts to set in that there's something wrong. People see me and they see something wrong. I had a teacher put me in front of the whole class, and she explained to the whole class why I looked different. How humiliating for a 7-year-old kid. There's something wrong. I had a person, an adult, say, I got glasses. I was so proud of my little cat's eye glasses when I was in the 6th grade. Oh, they were so cute. I had an adult say, I have never seen glasses improve someone's appearance so much. I was standing there. Now, did she mean to hurt me? Absolutely not. She was trying to say something to my mother and compliment me. But that's all about shame. And so there was that part of me that when I was doing my morning ritual, I was putting that makeup on, I was putting that smile on so that you didn't notice I looked different. So that you didn't understand that there was something wrong with me. I mean, I wanted to be a pretty girl. I wanted to have all the things that pretty girls have. And I wasn't pretty. There was a flaw. I have to tell you, and now I recognize that, sort of like my husband and I laugh, I wanted to live life in the fast lane. And if I'd have been prettier, I'd have been dead young. I really believe that. Because I'd have gone out and done some stuff that probably would have ended up with a whole different addiction. Anyway, so there's shame. There's shame, not because there was really anything terrible about me, but because I started to believe I was defective. Oh, and my first husband, bless his heart, he always said, oh, you have 1.5 pretty eyes. So anytime he complimented me, it was also a reminder that there was something wrong. I got to be a 12, 13-year-old girl, and I developed. And in our family, big boobs are just a part of the deal. But when you're a 13-year-old girl, and you want to look like the other popular girls, and they all look like Barbie. They didn't look like Barbie, but they were thin. And you're standing there like this. Guess what? Even when you're thin, you have a different silhouette, so you look bigger. So you start to do this. You start to slouch. You start to cross your arms. You start to hide. Not because I minded having the body I had, but because I just didn't want to be noticed for it. I didn't want the boys looking at me. And I didn't want to feel fat. Now, when I was a teenager, I'm the same size now as I was when I was a teenager. So, obviously, I didn't have any reason to apologize for myself. But I was ashamed because I was bigger. And I always had this vision in my head that I was much bigger than all, you know, a lot of the, I knew there were girls that were heavier than me, but for myself, I just thought I was too big. So there was another source of shame. When I married the man I married, he was a bully, so there was a lot of room to indoctrinate more shame into me. And what I think is interesting is that somehow I never had it in me to fight back against any of that. I wanted to, but I didn't have any way that I knew of to do that. I didn't hear this other side. You are good, you are kind, you are, you know, all of that. I only knew the bad things about me. When I left my husband, I went out and lived for 2 years in a lifestyle that probably was very different than what I had ever expected and very different from what I'd been taught. And I had a really good time, by the way. But then later, when I was trying to settle into a new marriage and I understood that meant that all that other stuff was behind me, then the shame about that behavior came up. You know, when I was doing it, I didn't feel ashamed of myself, but then the shame came from, oh, maybe those things you did weren't good. Maybe they were bad. I don't know if they were or not. I don't judge myself anymore. But at the time, that was a part of it. So here I was, happily married, had everything I thought I'd ever wanted. By the way, I have a husband who thinks I'm beautiful. And I couldn't stop eating because I didn't think I was worthy. I wasn't worthy of the life that had been provided for me. And the fear came in. Let's go back over there on that. I have a high school diploma, but I have never been to college. But any job I've ever taken on, I've moved up the ladder very quickly. I'm very organized. Well, maybe not organized, but I managed to get things done. And I'm very responsible. And when I talked earlier about working 5 or 6 hours after everybody went home, that was sort of the norm. But that was how I got the work done. So I excelled. But I would get to a certain level, and then I didn't know what else to do. I didn't know what was expected of me. And if I didn't know what was expected of me, I didn't have the skills, because I didn't have the extra education, to know what a manager did. So here I am managing 17 people, and I knew about the people skills that got you to do your job, but I didn't understand what my boss expected of me. I need you to tell me what kind of reports I'm supposed to run. I'd just like a little bit of feedback on what it is you expect of me. And so I moved beyond what I understood. And I was in a level that was, you know, what was it, the Peter principle? You rise above your competence or whatever. And I made some mistakes. And so then there was fear every day that somebody was going to find out. Now, none of the mistakes I ever made were terrible, hideous mistakes. They were always correctable, but each time I made a mistake, there was more shame, and there was more fear. And so I got to where there was a stack on my desk, and it was in the new age of electronics, and email was new, and we had no idea how ridiculous. So we would print the email off, and you would put it in a stack because you were going to get back to it. And my stack would just get so high, and about every 6 months, I'd just throw it in the trash. And I figured if nobody asked me a second time about it, it must not have been important. But there was shame and embarrassment and fear around all that, because somebody was going to find out I didn't know what I was doing. And it was so important to me to put on that face that said, I'm competent, I'm capable. and I can get the job done. And so those fears were the other piece of the continuous eating, the grazing from morning till night, the always wanting more. So my obesity started, my actual compulsive overeating started. I was a normal-sized kid. Like I said, this is how big I was as a teenager. But when I was married and I was in that unhappy marriage, I started to eat. And I started to eat and gained weight. I gained weight with my first baby. My husband was in Vietnam. When he came back, I had on maybe 10 pounds more than I had when he left. And he was like, well, I don't find you desirable. 10 pounds. And it was like, oh, okay. And then he had a lot of issues, but I always thought it had to do with if I could just do it better, if I could just be a more loving wife, if I could just make the house clean enough, if I could just do things to make him happy. And that was the pattern of our relationship. So he could shame me in a heartbeat. He could put me down, and the fear of making him angry, because it was an abusive situation. The fear around don't rock the boat. And again, I had no skills. I had no defense against any of that stuff. I just had the role models I had seen, which was my mother, my dad was not abusive, but he was demanding, and her way of dealing with him was to keep him happy, to give him what he wanted, to keep things rolling smooth. So that's my role model. That's the only thing I know how to do. That's what I tried to do. In work, I just looked around at the other competent, capable women dressed in their business professional, and luckily I had one or two that I could ask to mentor me, and I just faked it, baby. But you know, that eats away at your core. So then I come into OA, and I just am beaten. Well, I got to admit I was powerless over food. Just totally powerless. And I'm so grateful that God granted me abstinence very quickly. I became abstinent within 4 months after he came in. I had a binge. Like, the first sunny days was like, oh, look, I'm not eating out of jars. That was my very first abstinence, to not eat out of the other people's candy jars. And then it was, to figure out a food plan was something like three meals a day, nothing in between. And that's actually still my basic food plan. It just works for me. I've had other friends, and they're like, oh, I have to have a snack, and I have a snack. And when I have a snack, all I think about is when I get to have my snack. So I go back to three meals a day, nothing in between, because for me that's a very monitored thing. I wanted to say what happened when I figured out, when I was granted my abstinence. And that was, I came in, everything was sunny, I went on vacation, I told my family they should all join a 12-step program because it was the best answer. I didn't have a freaking clue what you guys were doing, but I knew it was the answer because you told me it was the answer. And I ended up alone at my aunt's house, and I had a binge, which, even though I always ate all the time, it was very seldom that I would just sit down and gorge, but that's what I did that day. And I thought, nothing's going to work for me. Absolutely nothing's going to work for me. And when I came back, my sponsor, luckily I followed the rules. They said, get a sponsor. I had a sponsor. She called me, and she said, you haven't been at the meeting. And I said, oh, I was going to come back. That was a lie. And she said, well, I'd like to see you there on Tuesday. And so I went. So that kind of got me, okay, this person really cares about me. I can trust this person. And I just started doing what they said to do. Read a inspirational book, read The Four Today. I read The Four Today and six other inspirational books, because if you're going to be compulsive about something, what's wrong with being compulsive about that? And in one of those books, one day I read something about, we all have self, and I never always get this confused, but we all can tell you our story. I can sit down and tell you all the bad, horrible, awful things that ever happened to me, because I think they're far more interesting than all the good, beautiful, wonderful things that happened to me. I always said it was like sitting by Forrest Gump. Just give me an opening, and you get to hear my whole life story. I could tell you all about that. I could tell you why I ate. I ate because this person bothered me, and this person bothered me, and this thing upset me, and I could tell you that. But what I couldn't understand was I had to be responsible for myself. I wanted everybody else to take the blame, and I just wanted to be taken care of. Truly, one of my fantasies was to be an invalid, so that other people just brought me things, and I could just sit there like the big queen bee, and I didn't have to do anything. So that reading that explained that, and it said, but what you really need to understand is there comes a time where you have to accept responsibility for yourself and your behavior. And I read that, and I went to my meeting, and I said, I want to share about this thing I read, because it's really, really crucial, and it says that we have to know ourselves. We have to be responsible for ourselves. And I stomped my foot, and I said, I don't want to be responsible. Now, remember, I have children, husband, and a good job, and I am so responsible, and I'm admitting out loud my biggest fear. I don't want to do any of this. I don't want to do any of this. I don't want to be responsible. And I had a sensation. I know it was God, and I just felt held in God's hands because I knew I didn't have to do it alone. And the next morning I got up and I had 3 meals a day and nothing in between. And I keep forgetting to add the fact that a couple of weeks earlier I had started to pray because I wasn't going to have anything to do with the God thing when I came in that first 3 or 4 months. But when I made the decision that I wanted what they had and what they had, what how they got it was they prayed, I decided to pray. And so I prayed to whatever the heck was out there because I didn't know what God was. And the inner voice, that critical committee thing, did everything in its power to tell me that that was the dumbest idea I'd ever had. And I just said, shut the F up because I need to do this. I want this. I need to do this. I'm going to do this. And then the abstinence came. So I gave up when I admitted. I knew I was powerless over the food when I had the binge at my aunt's house. I claimed I wanted to not be responsible, and I had the step two. I knew I wasn't alone. I don't even know how that worked. And then step three, I turned my life over, and I became abstinent, miraculously. Now, did that take care of all the guilt and shame and fear of all those years? Absolutely not. Then the hard part came, and that was doing the rest of the steps. But that admission changed my life. I went on trying to fake it in that job, and I got really lucky. I had because of my appearance of competence, I got to travel internationally, and I was good at my job. Don't ever doubt that I didn't do what I was supposed to do. It sounds like I'm saying I wasn't. I was. But I went to London, I worked in London, I traveled to other places, but they took me over there and then left me in a hotel situation. And one of the things I learned about myself is I'm not good on my own. I need to be able to get to my meetings. Now they have meetings in London, but I was afraid to go, so I didn't go. And what that led to was relapse. And then I had to do the steps again. And I had to go back in there, and I had to get more honest about who I really am. And that's when I revealed that I have those horrible, awful thoughts, and that I can be not nice. Because my big fear is that you won't think I'm nice, and that I'm not enough. I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not whatever. I'm not enough. And so working through the steps that second time. I actually, when I did my fourth step, I only had like 3 people on it, and they were 3 people that were really close to me. I resented having to go to my mother-in-law's house 3 times a week. I resented that. I really didn't have to, but I resented it, and I resented my oldest stepson because he was the only person in the world who could take his dad's attention away from me. So I was jealous. And I don't remember what the other person was or anything, but when I was done and I only had these, and I thought, I only have 3 people, this is pretty good. And my sponsor said, so, you know, you're selfish, self-seeking, egotistical, and I don't remember what the other thing was. And she told me that, and I was like, it was like she stripped me naked. And I went home, and aren't you supposed to feel better after you do a fifth step, and you're just supposed to be able to just move? And I was just like, I had to call her back, and I said, I think you've just taken everything about me and exposed me. And she said, yeah, I know. Now we're going to work on that. So a lot of my six and seven didn't have to do with other people. It had to do with me. I had to go back and look at what's going on. And I'm to this day working on the am I good enough part. So I want to kind of move into today because this is something I'm working on. I love this program and I love my life. I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. A couple months ago, an opportunity came for me to go back to London, which I really, it was just a funny story, but I got to go. And one of the things that happened while I was there was I just kept thanking God. I kept saying, thank you, God, for this really great opportunity. Thank you, God. This is just so wonderful. And I thought, I can never be thankful enough. I'm not worthy because I can't prove to you that I am thankful. I can't prove to you that I am successful. I can't prove to myself is where it comes down to, because I think that it has to be something really big and tangible. Like I have to make a lot of money to show that I'm good. Or I have to have this certain response from other people. So lately, I am my own judge of my abstinence and my body size and all of that. We all know that I'm going to be going to World Service and running as trustee, and self-doubt comes up, and it says, I'm not thin enough, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not good enough. I don't have any doubt that I'll be able to do whatever work comes my way. But those other underlying things that whisper in my ear take away my confidence. And I just think, why? Why is all this coming up right now? Fear. Fear of just not being able to do as much as I say I can. Fear of rising above my level of competence. And then the thing about the body size, I listen too much to other people. And when I hear their methods, their ideas, I become afraid that my way isn't good. My way's been working for me for 14 years. And that's what God keeps telling me. Just let it go, Cindy. You're here. You're doing it. It's working for you. But shame? Because maybe I'm more comfortable with the shame. I don't know. Shame that maybe I'm going to be exposed. I'm not doing it perfectly. Or doubt. What is perfect? And when I was saying I couldn't be grateful enough, it occurred to me, God knows how grateful I am. God guides my abstinence. He's the one that tells me it's now time. When I lost that last 30 pounds about 5 years ago, it's because God said, you're finally ready. Because I had done all the things I could during that 10 years there where I weighed 170 pounds. I had tried exercise. I had tried. My portions got smaller and smaller until the point somebody said, why are you not eating? And I'm like, and then I was offered the gift of a different food plan. And if you're ever someone suggests a different food plan and your first reaction is, hell no, stop and ask God if maybe you should consider it. He led me in such a direct way towards my changing my food plan. And when I did it, it worked. I still eat 3 meals a day, nothing in between. I weigh and measure. And there are foods that I do not eat most of the time. And I'm going to say it that way because I don't like saying I'm 100% anything. Because I'm not. But when I do eat it, it's once. And it's old, you know, and it's not out of willfulness. It's just sometimes it's just what happens. You know, you get in a situation where that's what happens. And so I just love myself and accept that. God and I talk about it. My sponsor and I talk about it. And we move forward. So if you're looking for a perfect person, I'm not it. but I am abstinent, I am maintaining my weight, and I love what God gives me in this program, which is gentleness. I always use this, and it tickles me. My God just doesn't expect me to be perfect. He knows me. He knows me. He knows I'm going to go out and do something wacko. And that's okay. And some days I'm going to be mean and I'm going to say something harsh to my husband. And some days I'm going to get one more phone call than I want to take and think, I'm not answering this. I'm just not answering this. I don't want to talk to you right now. And those thoughts may even be meaner than that. Not just I don't want to talk to you, but... And that's okay. Because then the next day God wakes me up and he says, okay, now you have the energy. Now you have the time. Find a way to do this. If it's something I'm supposed to do, I will be led to do it. Self-doubt, shame. Oh, I wanted to share one of the most beautiful things about being in OA is I don't have any problem going without makeup and showing you my face. And I don't have any problems with the way I'm built anymore. In fact, the other day I had to go buy new undergarments and they were a size smaller. Yay! You know? It's just because I've come to so much peace with who I am, I don't have to hide the me anymore. But I just still have to share that there are still those other things going on in my head from time to time. And it's about working the steps. It's about working the steps. And step 8 says that one of the people that needs to be on our list of amends is ourselves. And we have to continue to love ourselves and work toward the sanity around that as well. Okay, and I think I really, that's about all I can think to say. So, we can just do sharing unless someone actually has a burning question they'd like to ask. So I'm going to say we're open for sharing. And
hi, I'm Cindy. I'm compulsive overeaters.
Hi, Cindy.
Shame is probably, I think it's the core of all addiction. And I think that guilt is, I made a mistake. Shame is, I am a mistake. And I came into this program believing I was a mistake, believing that the world would be better off had I never been born. It's a hard thing to deal with that. And within a couple of years of being in program, I had 4 of my five siblings come up to me individually and tell me, every problem in this family is your fault. Which was a gift to me, actually, because I didn't realize I was a scapegoat for the whole family. But I was bearing the shame of all of their dysfunction. And it was just weighing me down. And so my most important abstinence is an abstinence from shaming self-talk. And I do not do that perfectly by any stretch of the imagination, but I do it to the best of my ability every day. And I say, today is the day that God gave me, and he gave me as a gift to the world. And I'm going to do the very best I know how to do with it. And I had a really big thing about this weekend about fighting with the perfectionism that, and what kept coming in my writing and kept coming in everything was, it does not have to be perfect. It is not going to be perfect. It's okay to strive for excellence. You don't have to strive for perfection. Excellence, being the best we know how to be, to the best of our ability, it's all we can do. It's all we can do. And I'm just so grateful to be in a place that I'm living this dream. I wouldn't trade paths, not with nobody. I love being me. I love being the person that I am. And I spent 50 some years, 51 or so, hiding what I look like. I would dress in a way that would hide what I look like. And I don't dress to hide what I look like. I dress now to show what I look like, who I am. And if somebody doesn't like it, they can look somewhere else. I don't know what to tell you or whatever. And I'm so grateful that I don't know if I had died because I committed suicide when I was 30, you know, right before I came in program when I felt like it, this convention would not be the same as it is with me here at all, and or anything else around me. I just have to live today the best I know how and just be who I am. And my gift is to God his gift. If there's something that goes out to others, he gives that gift to other people. All I have to worry about is giving my gift to God. And if I do that right, there's no stopping what he's going to do with the gift that you give him. So I'm just really grateful to be here. Thanks.
Thanks.
My name's Judy. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Judy.
I've taken in so much. I heard myself do you, Cindy. As a nurse, I had to be perfect. First of all, being black, you know, the things, the programs I always say, you had to be better than because they're looking at you. I struggled with passing my boards. Took me 7 times. But yet, I wanted for the other nurses that was coming along the same thing that I wanted for myself till I got there, and God blessed me to do that. Made the dean's list, tutored others, but couldn't get it for myself. The message that I heard there was, you never thought you was worthy enough of getting that. Even going through school, going through the graduation, you're supposed to be happy. I was fearful. Okay, now we got that big test. So that program of not feeling qualified and then going out on the floor working and doing, I went through the motions and followed everybody else, but never feeling confident. So I thank God for placing me here. And this morning when I went through prayer and meditation, there was a booth that said grateful. And the spirit that came on me was a song I'm going to sing. I am grateful for the things that you have done. Yes, I'm grateful for the victory we won. I could go on and on and on and on about your words. Because I'm grateful, grateful, so grateful just to know you, Lord. Flowing from my heart are the issues of my heart. Your gratefulness. Thank you for all you've given me and fed me this weekend. I've taken it in.
I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Elizabeth.
And I related to so much. I, especially vividly to wearing vests and loose sweaters, not like the sweater girl sweaters, and hiding my new body and hating it. Now that was deeper for me because I had been my daddy's special little girl, and when I started developing that put a real strain on the relationship. And it's like I had already lost my mother. Now I was losing this closeness with my dad, and it was all because of this awful body that I hated so much. And then always feeling like hiding my own self just the way I was hiding my body, hiding my true self, and trying to be what other people wanted and trying to be nicer than I really am. And it's only here in program that I've been able to not hide so much. That dancing last night was the first time that I ever got up on the dance floor in one of these events. I think I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Hi, I'm Annie. I'm a compulsive overeater and anorexic.
Hi, Annie.
And thank you so much for your share. And first of all, I just have to get the acronyms out of the way because I love the acronyms. They help me to remember. And someone said earlier this weekend of shame being should have already mastered everything. Can really relate to that one. And fear, I think my favorite one is F everything and run. But in recovery, learning I can face everything and recover. Seeing how my fear is future events already ruined. And there's another fear one. But it's just been amazing. This last year I finally had the willingness to work with a sponsor on a more regular basis, you know, several times a week. And I got to do an inventory, really thorough inventory on shame and look at every single thing that I remembered from when I was born to now of things that I did that I was ashamed about. And some of them were things I'd done 4 steps on before, but they were still coming up. And so I got to look at, you know, what did that affect in me? Like it says in the big book, was it my personal relations, ambition, self-esteem, yada, yada. And then I got to look at my part And it was amazing to see of these, like, pages and pages. A lot of times my part was believing what other people said was true without questioning it, or taking things personally, or a lot of it was just how I talk to myself. It's not anything anyone else is doing. It's just my old tapes playing. Someone said, you know, that's probably going to be, like, some people have chronic low back pain, and, like, sometimes it acts up, and sometimes it's kind of quiet, but what I can do about it is when it comes up, I can talk to other people that are loving and kind and gentle and help me to remember to go to my higher power and ask for the truth. Like, is this even true? You know? And that's so hard for me because I just want to kind of like, okay, figure things out on my own. And then I'll take the nice, neat package to my sponsor, whoever afterwards. And look what I figured out with my higher power. But a lot of times I need the other people along the way. It's just amazing to get to do that with other people that, you know, I know that's safe with them. So there's still a lot of shame and fear, but it's just lessening. I think it's just so amazing that in program we get to ask, you know, take it to the higher power and say, is this true? And if it is part of the truth, you know, just, it's really easy to accept myself and love myself when I'm doing everything the way I think I should be doing it and all that, but it's a whole nother thing to love and accept myself in my flaws and in my humanness. And so I think for shame and fear, a big thing is just trying to learn how to be compassionate and have empathy. So I don't grow too much when I'm beating myself up. I grow a lot more when I accept and remember that higher power is going to do the changes when higher power sees it's time to do the changes. I think I shouldn't have shame and fear, but I'm realizing it's just kind of a human thing. I'm glad I don't have to eat over it anymore. A big thing I'm afraid about coming up is getting back into work in the health professions. I'm excited, and it's just because of step work in the program that I'm even willing to try. And I also have to say I was really afraid this weekend to MC and do some of this stuff, and you guys have just been so amazing. So thank you for helping me to walk through that one.
Thanks, Abby.
My name is Catherine, I'm a compulsive over and under eater.
Hi, Abby.
And thank you, Cindy, for sharing this morning. I think this one came up for me recently. I've become aware of how much shame is going on with me around my work situation, and I'm also reworking my food plan. And I'm also got some health issues going on. So all this change and so on is going on. And so recently, just the other day, I was listening to some of the old messages just to hear what they were saying. And one of them that came up was, you'll never make it out there on your own. I stopped with that one because someone taught me that the problem with the lies is that there's a piece of the truth in it. And when I looked at that and said, that is true. I can't make it out there on my own. But I don't have to depend on those from my past who couldn't do and didn't do what I needed. Now I've got my higher power and I've got my support system that I've developed. And so it was just stopping long enough to say that I don't have to stay stuck in the shame. And that, more than anything, is what's come up for me this weekend, is acknowledging that my attempt to be perfect at work right now is because of all the changes that are going on, and I really am afraid that I'm going to lose my job because of all the changes that are going on right now. I don't know that for sure, and, you know, and so I'm getting caught in the fear and the shame. And so when I get back to right now and connecting with my higher power right here and living one day at a time, then I don't have to worry about what's going to happen somewhere down the road. That's all I have. Thanks.
I'm Mary Bell. I'm a carb addict.
Hi, Mary Bell.
My former sponsor in OA, Marilyn Sue, defined abstinence as shame-free eating. I am never going to do the food perfectly because I have to deal with it 3 or 4 times a day. And alcohol, yeah, that's got to be perfect, okay? Thank God it has been. But food is something I'll never be able to do, quote, perfectly, which is a myth word anyway. Perfect doesn't exist. It's a word that keeps us all in fear and shame. The acronym for shame I use especially applies to Overeaters Anonymous. Singularly horrendous and massively empty. I am the worst person who has ever been born, who will ever be born. I am singularly horrendous. and massively empty. And I kept trying to fill that hole with everything until I finally today get to fill it with God. I think certainly working on shame, and I think regularly done fifth steps with my sponsor, keeps me out of shame. And if I goof up with my food, then I talk about it with my sponsor the next day, so that I am doing only by the grace of God and the sisterhood of Overeaters Anonymous shame-free eating. Thank you all.
Thanks.
Thanks.
I'm
Julie. Hey, Julie.
Growing up, I was kind of, in a way, my family just liked to, you know, I was always performing for them to get the attention from them, from my parents. So, and my, I had a lot of flaws in my body that were kind of hereditary. And I had this birthmark that goes like from here all the way up. So, being a kid, I didn't give anybody a chance to even make fun of me because I put that wall up already. And I was a tom girl, and my dad taught me how to fight. So I was pretty much like, you're not going to mess with me. And I think I already put that out there as that defense all the time of, don't mess with me. But, so as a kid, I was like, okay, nobody's messing with me, you know, and nobody's going to make fun of me. And then as I got older, I didn't know how to deal with girls, you know, I didn't know how to communicate because I was hanging around boys. I was running around doing all kinds of stuff that guys did. I was very upfront and direct. It was just kind of like, whatever. Dealing with girls, I was like, oh, I don't know how to do this. I don't know what their dynamic is, you know. And so I had more walls had to be put up. And I think as I got older, I got into, because I ate so much, and then I just gradually isolated, to where I was just me. It was just me in this wall. Now it's like I'll go places, and I feel like I have this wall around me still of don't mess with me. But once people are able to get past that wall, really underneath I am very nice and I'm very vulnerable. But I just don't know if people can see that. There's like few people that can come through and see that before I even get the wall going, you know, so. But being in this program as long as I've been now, about 5 years, the walls are coming down. I was at the meeting about the body image, and I was even thinking about it this morning about how, it's like, yeah, I gotta get my head out of that idea of being that physical, muscular, you know, like I used to be, you know, and my body's not going to be like that. And that kind of just really kind of opened into that acceptance, because I think I was still like not wanting to accept that it doesn't, even when I get to my weight, it's still not going to be that muscular, active body that I had when I was younger. And so that was kind of like, okay, so now I'm going to have to really accept my body as it is. And like, I never wear sleeveless shirts because of my arm. Because I don't want to be stared at. I don't want the attention. So when I get to that point of being able to accept my body, that I'll wear what I really want to wear and not to hide and cover up. So, I'm still working on it, but I'm glad I'm here. Thanks.
Thanks, Julie.
Hi, I'm Kathy. I'm the compulsive overeater.
Hi, Kathy.
I'm just going to be honest for the first time in a long time. I hate myself. I hate the way I look. I looked in the mirror this morning and I thought, actually, I fell asleep at the hotel like this. And the mirror was in front of me, and I woke up, and I'm like, oh, my God, look at that chin. What the hell? How did you get this way? You're disgusting. And I've been in OA in and out since probably 1984. I weigh more than I ever had, and I eat more than I ever have. So I've only had a couple of days abstinence, but I wanted to come because I thought I could get, you know, something out of this. I was angry yesterday at people who were thin and talking, and I couldn't believe that you'd ever had my problem. I thought, oh, you're full of shit, you know? I mean, and I sat and I got through it, and the shame is almost unbearable at times. You know, I wake up in the middle of the night, I would, and eat half a loaf of bread, and wake up in the morning and just feel like a piece of crap. I know there's a lot of shame from my past as a child and that kind of thing. There are emotions coming up that I sure don't want to feel, but you know, I'm going to feel. So anyway, I kind of have been sitting at these meetings kind of very closed and my mouth kind of set and just, and I felt like I had to speak up to say, you know, I really am glad I'm here, and I'm really glad for everybody and for hearing your stories, because they have touched me. That's really all I want to say. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. I'm Joanne. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Joanne.
I'm nervous. I so much want you to like me. I so much want to belong. I moved here from Arizona last May. I live in a very rural area, and it's cold, and I have to go 30 miles to a meeting where there's just a couple other people, and I'm trying real hard to share my recovery so that, really selfishly, so I can have a community. I just went back at the beginning of February. It's like, I'm freezing to death. You know, my husband and I went back for a month. We got to, you know, I went to 6 meetings a week. I connected up with all my OA friends, which I've tried to stay in touch with on the phone. But and I got all excited because it's like, okay, I'm going to go back. Maybe we'll start a second meeting, you know, so I can at least have fellowship a couple times a week. I'm going to go to this convention, you know. But I just stick my nose out just a little bit. I'll just be a little bit. I mean, that's been my experience, what I've been doing. You know, I'll help a little bit with service, or I'll smile at somebody. But I just need to say I'm lonesome. And I noticed, too, the shame and the fear. Like, oh, my program isn't good enough to be sponsoring. You know, I haven't done my 8th and 9th step as well as I should have done it to be helping other people, you know. I've been in this for 7 years. I started really way back in 72. I had 8 years in, and really changed my life. And then 30 years out trying to survive, and I'm so grateful for OA. I'm so excited to be able to live the rest of my life, but in recovery. But it's hard, you know. It's hard, and some of that, a lot of that shame and fear, you know, doesn't. It subsides, and then it comes back. And isolation is a big part of that, and that's my tendency. That's my go-to place, you know, to curl up kind of in the corner, get my books, you know, maybe have a phone call. But I need lots of hugs. You know, I need physical connection with people. So I just had to put myself out there, because if I don't put myself out there, you'll never know me, you know, and I'll never have what I need. So thanks. I'm a weepy person. Thanks.
Great. Fear and shame. I think that we as women, I was reading somewhere in Women, that women's number one need is for women have a need to be loved and reassured and for good conversation and affection. And I think that's all a really good thing. But I think in program, I've learned it matters where you get it from. And I think before I was in program, I would get it anywhere I could get it. And it makes no sense to go out with a man who doesn't have a job, who does drugs, and tells you right up front, I'm not interested in children, you know. And then how many? Then they marry you, marry them, or you get a relationship, and then you wonder why you're not happy. And I mean, but now I think a little bit more with my choices with work and with people. And if I'm with a person who's secure and is positive and like that, and my husband is a part of that, I mean, when I have a hard time, his reassurance is a healthy thing, but it's not healthy from other places. And I used to take jobs wherever I would pick them up. And then when it fell apart, that was kind of ridiculous. And so, and then I think program is a foundational place. This is a safe place for us that we're all trying to get healthy. And if we're not, we're pretty upfront about it. And when I was doing the retreat last fall, you know, I could be myself, and I was a very flawed person in that process. But I was in a place where I could grow in that process, not become less than what I was. Someone said something to that effect, like beating up on yourself doesn't help you grow. But I think that this program is a good place to go where we can put both feet and be who we are and then get stronger and don't have the fear and the shame. And also for myself to make the choices, to make healthier choices so I can get my needs met. And not feel stupid because I'm not getting them need met because I didn't make the right choices in the first place. So, thanks.
Hi, I'm Cindy, and I'm a compulsive eater, and I want to add one thing that I heard last night. We don't have to beat ourselves bloody to be sorry enough for whatever the heck it was. I just want to repeat that because there might be somebody that didn't hear that. We don't have to beat ourselves bloody to be sorry enough, and that's part of shame. That, to me, that was a huge thing. That it, just like I couldn't be grateful enough, there are things that I cannot be sorry enough for, but God knows I'm sorry. So I don't have to go out and hurt myself to prove it. And I loved that, and I just wanted to repeat it because I thought it was a really great thing to say. Now, finally, we're going to close with I put my hand in yours. Thank you.
I put my hand in yours. And together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. We are all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. Keep coming back. It works when you work it, and you're worth it.